Hello and welcome to the Art of Balance podcast, brought to you by Balanceology with me, Dylan Cox, and my wife and author of the best-selling book Burnout to Brilliance, Jane Morris. Jane is also a regular contributor to Psychology's magazine. Together we take a light-hearted approach whilst doing deep dives into topics that we believe can help improve your day-to-day lives. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on Instagram at balanceology.uk or alternatively visit our website balanceology.uk. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about shame and the different types of shame. There's short-held shame and there's also toxic shame, which can be chronic and last for years. And we'll also talk about solutions of how you can stop shame from negatively impacting your life and also uncover why shame could be the root cause for a lot of other emotions or illnesses that you're presenting with. We hope you enjoy today's episode. So today's episode is all about shame, Jane, and shame is something that affects all of us. We've all probably experienced the emotion or the feeling of shame, but when reflecting upon it, we can often confuse it with other emotions. So I just wanted to start the episode really talking a little bit about what shame is and what the causes of shame are. So in your own words, Jane, how would you describe shame as we're talking about it today?
Well, I think the area of shame that we're probably going to focus on is where in childhood or maybe the early teenage years, or even to be really honest, at any stage where we've been put in a position where the sort of spotlight shining on us and we're either standing opposite, metaphorically, somebody who is in a position of authority in relation to us, and we've been somewhat exposed or made to feel very vulnerable, but on top of that, made to feel bad about something, so guilty about something, yet our experience of that guilt becomes something that we internalise, and we then interpret that as we are shameful. So rather than seeing it as a sort of a behaviour that's separate to us that resulted in a certain outcome, we internalise that feeling of guilt and feel that we are not enough, essentially. And so what happens, especially in childhood, when there's somebody in a position of authority and we're in a heightened state of emotion, so either because we've had something going on and we're in a particular state, or because we've been, as I say, sort of put on the spot, like the spotlight's on us, and in front of maybe an audience or something, we feel like this intensity of emotion and vulnerability, and that person in the position of authority, whatever they say or whatever they do in the moment where we're made to, where the setup is such that we feel shame, it really intensifies that, and the effect of that we can carry with us way beyond childhood into our adult lives. Some people, if it's not something that they address and look at and identify where it creeps up in their lives and how it then hampers them, it can be something they take to their deathbed.
Interesting. So I guess there's a lot of a relation with shame and guilt, right? They're related somehow, and there are other related emotions when we talk about shame, such as embarrassment, humiliation. You distinguish guilt and shame there quite nicely. I think it's like guilt is really the feeling of I did a bad thing, whereas shame is more like I am a bad thing. And guilt implies there's an element of remorse that is possible and that could lead to change, where shame is a lot more layered and long-lasting than maybe sort of guilt, which can be a more fleeting feeling or emotion. So that's very interesting. And what I was going to sort of ask you about now, Jane, was how shame can not only affect you like as a child, like you said, but as an adult. It's that kind of shame, the toxic kind of shame. It can not only have an effect on you as a kind of from a well-being perspective, but can have actually physical effects as well, where it manifests in a hunched up posture. It can manifest in tenseness in your body and things. So yeah, I just wondered like how we can explore toxic shame and see, because that may relate to some people, because one of the things that I find with clients when I'm coaching them is that often the symptoms they're presenting that they're coming to coaching for, such as, oh, I'm slightly depressed, or I need help with my confidence, those things are masking a root cause issue, which actually, a lot of the time, surprisingly to me, is actually shame.
Mm. Yeah, and you touched on that fact that it can manifest in different ways for different people, and I think essentially a lot of that depends what the shame, the root cause of that shame, when that was first experienced, what that was in relation to. So especially in terms of how the person holds their body and how they even relate to their body, because some shame related issues can be to do with the body, like being made to feel shameful of their body, and then they can go on and become sort of disconnected from their body and feel that they can't relate with their body and enjoy their body because of the shame that was associated with it. So a really obvious one in relation to that, when I think back to my childhood, was around sort of nudity. And that was something that I probably didn't really overcome until I got to university and met some friends who had parents who were a bit more liberal than mine were. And they had no inhibitions about sort of stripping off, getting changed in front of each other, you know, wearing next to nothing on the beach abroad, things like that. And it's something that I think a lot depends on the culture and sometimes the religious overtones of what was, when we were little, perceived as being acceptable or not, and then where that linked to shame. And if somebody has had sort of experiences where their bodies were abused, and there was perhaps they'd been, if they were sexually abused especially, there can be a lot then that stays with that person in relation to their body because of those experiences, whether they were one-off incidents or whether it was something reoccurring. And so lifting the layers of shame and identifying where the shame, the root cause, as you suggested, formed, is the key really to dissolving shame and somebody freeing themselves from it.
Because you can get this childhood shame from your parents not willingly or knowingly making you feel a certain way, but the way that they may have dealt with a mistake you have made in the past and the way that they spoke to you could have led to you creating this image in your mind that you're not worthy, you're not good enough. And it could have just been a comment that they said, and they hadn't given any thought to it, and they didn't know the right thing or the right way to deal with it. The right way perhaps would be for a parent to explain the consequences of your actions when looking at a mistake, but not making you feel bad about it, just giving you the opportunity to learn from it. But in many instances, your parents may have been telling you off for something and making you feel guilty and bad about it, and then that shame has stayed with you throughout your adult life, and that is what turns into toxic shame because it's basically chronic and you can't get rid of it.
Yeah, so that's what I meant when I said about somebody in a position of authority. So our parents when we're young would be those figures to us, as would our teachers.
Yeah.
And then as you move through life, like the people that hold the activity groups that we belong to, or the religious communities, the people who are sort of the leaders in those settings. And then when we move into higher education or the workplace setting, it becomes our boss, and these things then get sort of transferred over to the repercussions of these experiences transfer over into different settings and either get confirmed by other incidents that we get exposed to, or it, like you say, it's just there in the background. That sort of toxic effect of it continues to be felt, and we continue to try and adapt our behaviours as a way of overcoming our shame or meeting our shame.
Well, I think that's an important point to mention, is that I guess guilt is heavily linked to our behaviour, whereas shame is more linked to our identity. So when we're experiencing shame, it's all about us and not an action we've done. It's about us as a person, mm-hmm. whereas guilt can be about an action that we've carried out. And that also ties in with the sort of science behind it, where studies suggest that guilt is happening in the logical part of your brain, in the prefrontal cortex, whereas shame is very much happening and connected to the limbic system, which is a part of the brain that is influenced by autonomic nervous system, which is responsible for actually the flight or fight response, which is really interesting because there is a thread here of being in that fight or flight mode throughout your whole life from when you've harbored this shame, which then can lead to other things such as burnout, yeah, which is really interesting. So there is a clear difference between guilt and shame and how we hold it. And I think that is why shame has these kind of physical and emotional responses that can lead us to want to be defensive or want to retreat and hide or even become depressed and anxious and create a dependency on drugs or alcohol to help deal with that feeling of shame.
Yeah, because they provide an escape from it. And when there's nobody supporting a person through the shame that they've internalized, it can feel as though they can't almost escape that sensation in their body, which is why those dependencies more often than not are there, because they're an escape from the feeling.
So Jane, what can toxic shame actually do to us? I know we've talked about it can kind of isolate you, I guess, and it can cause that emotional distress that can lead to anger, sadness and kind of self-loathing. But are there any other things that toxic shame can do to you?
Well, as you mentioned or hinted at a little earlier, that kind of connection with burnout, because if somebody's experiencing shame ongoing and it's coming up for them every day and their body as a result of it is in the sort of fight or flight mode, as you suggested, that can lead to burnout. But equally, there's a connection there with burnout from the way in which shame can fuel perfectionism, which is that in relation to that feeling of not being enough. So you said it's as though when somebody's internalized this feeling of not being good enough, then they can almost make it a subconscious life mission to prove their worth, to prove that they are good enough. And quite often when somebody's doing that, it will show up through perfectionism. Everything has to be done to their very best of that person's ability, because otherwise it's not good enough. It'll be written off as being less than sufficient. So that's quite a big clue there for somebody, actually, if perfection is one of your things, just going deeper into that to see where there may be shame from the past that is coming out and showing up through that need to make everything perfect.
One of the tricky parts about shame and where it does massively differentiate from guilt is that people to go into that shame, they have to get over the barrier of actually reviewing why they have it, and that can kick up a load of stuff and very difficult to face up to, because you have to ask those questions to yourself, yeah, about where it's come from and why it's there, and that can almost be such a barrier that they turn the other way and they never want to deal with it. And that's why it can be extended over years and years of a lifetime,
yeah,
because it's so hard to face up to.
And yet when you do face up to it, mountains can be moved. It is actually then, it's being brave enough to develop the self-awareness and to go there with someone, which I think there's also a connection there with that avoiding, in feeling that you're not enough, you don't want someone to discover you're not enough. So you try and cover up any flaws that you have. And there's a connection there with narcissism. When we've talked about narcissism on a previous episode, narcissists will be very hesitant to admit that they don't marry up to kind of anything other than an ideal version of themselves. In their sort of mind's eye, they want to outwardly display themselves as being kind of an optimum version of a human, and therefore any sort of self-exploration becomes very difficult when somebody has that level of a kind of identity disorder.
It's like they don't want to admit to themselves that they could be anything that they need
other than
to.
Perfect.
Yeah, other than perfect. Yeah. And it's very difficult to get around that. So we just quickly run through a couple of the other things that toxic shame can affect. And relationships is one of them, obviously, because you could find yourself in a situation, and this may relate to people. They may wonder why my relationships never seem to be fully connected. I don't really seem to open myself up to people. It's because maybe you're not willing to let your guard down because you're still protecting yourself from this fear of not being good enough, and this overwhelming fear of unworthiness that has more likely than not got its roots in your childhood and things that have been said to you and things that you have taken on board that aren't true, but you have created them as your story.
Rightly or wrongly. Well, they'll have felt true because whoever told you or gave you the impression that you weren't good enough because of the way they portrayed you or set up a certain scene at a certain time, it's the desire to almost to prove that person wrong in a sense sometimes. Sometimes there's not actually even that drive to prove somebody wrong. It's like that person then never even really gets started, because the other way this can manifest is somebody feeling as though they're so unworthy that they don't have any drive. Then they beat themselves up because of not achieving, not being productive, not, they sort of measure themselves then against other people and feel lazy, feel, you know, and then that becomes a cycle of perpetual.
You got it, Jane. You got this. Don't create a negative story in your head about you not being able to say perpetual. You got this.
But perpetual laziness or perpetual, you know, sense of...
Why are you looking at me?
I'm not looking at you intentionally. But yeah, we've touched on those topics before as well. And it can make somebody either very driven to be this version of themselves that's almost superhuman, and then run themselves in the ground with it, or almost have a hopelessness about themselves that they feel, oh, I'm not good enough, so I'm not even going to try, because whatever I do, it's never going to marry up to the ideals that were set and the expectations that were placed on me.
So it can go either way.
Indeed, a spectrum in the middle, right?
But what effect does this negative self-talk have on people, where they're repeating messages to themselves of, I'm bad, I'm broken, I'm not good enough, I'm worthless, I'm hopeless, these things, and that must have just such a negative impact over a long period of time. So A, the question is, what effect does that have? And the second question is, the bigger question is, how do you snap out of that?
Well, I think the what effect does that have, even just you saying those things, anybody listening, even if they don't relate to this for themselves in their own lives, I'm sure
they can imagine.
They probably have a picture in their mind, if not feeling it and relating to it themselves, of somebody they know, and the weight that those things bring on somebody, like the weight that you carry with the burden of that feeling of being broken, you know, not being good enough, feeling hopeless, it takes its toll on us, whether it's because we're stuck in this fight or flight mode and we end up being adrenals becoming fatigued, or whether it takes its toll on us because we're stuck in that freeze mode where we don't actually ever get started, and that then feels heavy and sad and lonely and unfulfilling, and that creates a drag on somebody. Which, when you say snap out of it?
It is about
snapping out of it. It's not because somebody is intentionally staying stuck in something. This is always a subconscious thing, but to break the cycle, we kind of do need like a kind of a boom, like wake up type breakthrough moment, which can be something that happens because the penny drops in a conversation. It can be something that comes over time through gentle exploration and kind of piecing the bits together. Again, it's neither necessarily one extreme or the other. For most people, it's something in the middle.
So if you catch, we've talked about this in other episodes about catching your kind of negative self-talk or your bad thoughts, but if you are able to catch yourself when you're repeating these mantras regularly, or you have beliefs that are ingrained in your very being, or you're just playing out the same story all the time, how do you, or who can help you, or what can help you from realizing, making you realize that they are not accurate, they are not the reality of the situation? You've created almost a false reality, and like you say, at no fault of your own, you've done this because a person in authority when you were young who had a big impact on you, whose opinion you trusted and believed was true, has given you this this story.
Yeah, and like you said at the beginning, it's not even their fault.
No, it's not about blame. Sometimes, we've talked about blame before.
Sometimes people have very intentionally done it. Yeah. And it's been very cruel and very cutting. And you know, some people will have been very, obviously shamed on purpose by someone else as an example to be set, right? But more often than not, it's something that's happened and the other person hasn't been even aware that that's been their longer term impact. They've probably just been even playing out the patterns of their own past in like almost a autopilot type mode.
It's,
you know,
a generational thing,
and
just
it's
keeps
generational
going.
Shame. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's one area we haven't even touched on, is the topic of ancestral shame, the shame that gets held in a generation and passed to the next generation. It's almost like it's passed in our very DNA. I mean, you need to look at the sort of the landscape of Europe, for example. We happen to sort of live in that part of the world. And so it's probably clearer to us in the history we've learned through our own school education. But there's certain countries in Europe that have held on to shame for the actions of their ancestors at different points in the history of time, you know. And the younger generation then grow up with that on their shoulders. And it's up to them then to dissolve it so that they can release it and let go of it. So what you asked about is, you know, how do you do that? How do you catch yourself? Well, you can't catch yourself without having identified where your shame lies. How does it show up? Noticing what are the stories that are told? What have been the beliefs that you formed? If you were to draw a picture of yourself and write around your sort of self-portrait, all of that self-talk that goes on, that, and where it's been informed, you know, has it come from your family? Has it come from your education system? Has it come from your culture? Has it come from your religion? Where are all of these beliefs that have been stored up in you? They're not who you are, but they're beliefs that you hold. And where do those link with shame? Where is the shame? Is it from, you know, stuff that's carried on from other generations of the past? Is it family shame? Is it shame that came through particular experiences that you endured, one-offs or you know, series of things that happened to you? And notice how you feel carrying all that around you. Like, what does that person in that portrait, what are they experiencing day in and day out? Do you want that experience to continue? Are you done with the story yet? Because there's, for many people, a certain level of comfort or some sort of reassurance that comes from telling the story. We've probably all met people who we've experienced that person stuck in the story that they tell everybody they meet, and they tell them more than once. And where that story relates to shame for you, who would you be without that?
That's quite a scary place for some people, I'm sure. But
it can also be quite an exciting place. Because if you're willing to explore who you are free from all of that, it means you no longer need to tell that story anymore. It no longer has power over you, and you instead become the power in your own life.
So one of the things you can do is that simple exercise you kind of talked about, where you just draw, I guess, yourself and then these stories around you.
Yeah.
But you could also, outside of just working with yourself, you could focus on the supportive relationships that you do have, right? So you may have people who do really care about you and do really want to help you, and being able to share that feeling of shame with them won't be easy initially, but if you trust them and you care about them and they've given you no reason for you to think that they wouldn't react well to it, that's a good start, because you've already got a network there before maybe working with a practitioner or a therapist.
Yes, sharing, and it's really about exploring, are the beliefs you hold about yourself in relation to the shame that you experienced, are they true? And sometimes a good friend, someone that you're able to open up to in that way, will be able to help you to actually challenge the beliefs you have about yourself that are shame related. Sometimes they won't. They'll keep you stuck in the story because they're so used to hearing you tell it.
This is why I'm saying you've got to find the person who you can identify that has maybe been a supporter of you and hasn't made you ever feel like you're... hasn't jumped in the hole with you all the time. You know, you're going to have friends that are like, oh yeah, that's really bad and that's who you are. But there'll be somebody, maybe a family member, a colleague or a close friend who's going to be like, no, do you know what? Like, I get where you've been, what you've been going through, but I'm not going to judge you on why you've been feeling that, and they can help you out. So you, if that person exists, they don't always exist, but it's like, that's a good place to look initially. It's like, do I actually have anybody who's not a cheerleader, but a supporter of mine that's going to actually, I feel is going to actually help me?
Well, yeah, the benefit of that is somebody who would be able to help you to sift through the things that are contra to your limiting beliefs, that would be evidence to show that you are lovable, that you are more than enough, that you are all the things that are the opposite of those shame-related beliefs, right? And yet, because you kind of want to collect them up to help discount the story that isn't true when you're challenging it. And that's what a good therapist or coach would do, is help you to challenge these beliefs that you've internalized and that have become part of your story, that are like this false identity that you have. So when you've drawn an image of yourself and you've identified what's there, the next step is, yes, catching yourself when you're having those thoughts, then challenging those thoughts. So you want to be able to challenge them from a place of love for yourself, which is a huge thing to go into for some people.
Because you deserve love, not from just others, but you deserve your own love as well, right? Like, so you've got to challenge them from a place of love, because it's self-care, essentially.
Well, you can't. Yeah. You actually block yourself from receiving love from anyone else if you're not actually feeling that you're lovable yourself. Because you can't... It's like... it's like those, like the gates aren't open. It's like you just block anything coming in when you don't believe you're lovable. So it's absolutely believing that for yourself, working on that self-love.
And self-compassion, I guess, as well.
Yes, being self-compassionate. And then, like, when you were sort of talking about identifying the things, and almost it's like celebrating the successes, the times where you have seen for yourself that you're more than these limiting beliefs, and collecting those up so that at times when you go into these old ingrained patterns, you've then got enough that you can refer back to boost yourself and focus your attention on the good, on the things that are really hopeful and wonderful and exciting and hold potential for the future for you, so that you can come up out of that place of shame and create a brighter future and take steps towards that in a really positive way that leaves the shame behind.
And I guess when you practice that, you actually, the key kind of gift, I guess, that you get from that is this ability then to practice more empathy yourself, because you're not only going to be kinder to yourself, you'll perhaps be kinder to the people that, once you've discovered where this shame is rooted, you, initially there will be some anger and frustration or disappointment in whoever that may have been, a parent or a teacher or a person in authority. And that ability to then get to a place where you're able to harness some empathy will not only just help your own self-healing, but it will also just give you an extra tool in the future to be able to be like, okay, I'm not going to be so hard on myself, and I can be empathetic towards people who I think are going to be like trying to put shame on me. Because you realize, like we said before, it's just a thing that they do, and it's not, although it has a huge lifelong personal effect on you, it was maybe not the intention always. Sometimes it was, like you said, but when you're getting to a point of empathy, you've almost got like a bulletproof vest onto that kind of stuff, because you see it for a different lens than you did perhaps before.
Yeah, you can appreciate that behavior that person's maybe demonstrating in that moment is not who they are, and it comes from their own patterns. But it's also a bit like that catch it, kill it, bin it type approach.
What, isn't that COVID?
Yeah.
Oh, you are talking about that. Yeah. Okay, great.
Because when you catch something like that in the moment, you can also challenge it in somebody else and not stand for it anymore. You don't have to be a victim to it.
Yeah.
So catching that behaviour, stopping it dead and disposing of it, because you don't want that shit in your life anymore, and there's no benefit in keeping that cycle going. And sometimes other people need to be snapped out of it. So I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, workplace bullying, anything that's carried over in other people from other people's past that's still playing out, that is not healthy, not helpful, is not beneficial to either party. Why continue that experience? You don't want to be a victim to those things anymore if you've already been enduring that in your life. So putting a stop to that. And you mentioned anger and frustration. There's two other whole episodes I feel we need to do on both of those, because quite often those big emotions when we're children are emotions that aren't allowed in many settings, haven't been in our generation. Now as adults,
well, even with kids now though at school, they're
having to sit on themselves,
but they're not encouraged to express their frustration, are they? Anger,
it's not got a place in the classroom, there's not space or time for it,
and but it's the dampening of expression, isn't it? And that's the problem.
And then they bottle it all up, and then they don't have an outlet for it unless it's safely held by someone in their life in another space. Like, and we're talking about very, you know, typical mainstream schools right now. There are some wonderful schools, I'm sure, where it's very much given an avenue for expression. But so what I want to share on that is that anger and frustration may come up through this, and it's great to have some holding with that so that you can healthily learn how to express and make contact with your anger, how to make contact with frustration, because the whole range of emotions that you have as a human are part of what make you human. Each and every one of them are as valuable and good as another. One is not good and one is not wrong. Do you know what I mean? They all have a value, and they all need to be expressed and given a space. So when anger and frustration comes up, that's actually a really great thing. It means you're breaking through to these pent up emotions that haven't had the opportunity to be voiced.
They've been suppressed.
Just as when people break down and cry when they come to meet something head on that they haven't faced, and suddenly there's this welling up of emotion. You know, sadness and grief are often emotions that we're not allowed to feel either. Sometimes we've sat on happiness because our own happiness puts somebody else in a place of comparing themselves, and then we're told, oh, don't be too happy or you're upset so and so, you know.
Is it okay if I express my anger and frustration at the dishes at home? Is that okay? Because I feel like, you know, there's an ongoing battle between how we deal with the dishes. I like to wash and dry and put away in one fell swoop, whereas you like to wash and leave out to
and then
dry.
Put away once they're
well,
in
I don't know if you've ever
time
put them away, because you always say you fall asleep.
And there's then, another
then
podcast.
They end
time
up there. Anyway, I try to leave it on a lighter note there, but there's loads more to explore, basically, and not just in the shame realm, but yes, in anger and frustration as a bigger topic themselves. But also very interesting today how there is some links between shame and burnout, but also how shame sort of underpins a lot of those other emotions and feelings that we may be experiencing that we don't know why. So the depression or the anxiety could be rooted in a childhood experience or trauma that has led to toxic shame. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and don't forget to check us out, balanceology.uk, for all our latest information, workshops and courses. And we'll catch you next week on the Art of Balance podcast.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode and you're able to take away some good ideas about how to Face up to shame if you have any that you think may be holding you back, or help others who you think may be experiencing shame at the moment or at any stage of their life. Remember, you can check our website balanceology.uk for all the latest information, our courses, our workshops, and how to get in touch. Drop us an email, hello@balanceology.uk, with any ideas about future podcast topics or any questions that you have about coaching or well-being in general. We look forward to hearing from you. All the best, take care, and we'll see you on the next week's episode of the Art Balance Podcast.